Chapter 3. Corporal Frank Cooper pressed as low into the foxhole as he could get and held tightly onto his World War I-style steel helmet. His rifle, also vintage World War I, leaned nearby. Since the Japanese attacked on December 8, 1941, he still hadn't fired the 1903 Springfield. He and his company had suffered plenty at the hands of the Japanese, however. The constant and unopposed bombing and strafing by the Japanese Air Force never seemed to end. And with the Japanese having landed to the north and south of Manila, heavy artillery bombardments happened every day.
"Here they come!" Corporal Loper yelled from the next foxhole over. "Hold on to your balls!"
The distinctive whistling of falling bombs had become almost commonplace. He doubted anyone would ever get used to being bombed, but by now they could distinguish pretty well when the bombs would be close, just by the sound. This batch would be close. The first impact shook the earth, and dirt clods fell from the sides of his hole. He hunkered lower and closed his eyes, but quickly opened them again, not wanting the last thing he saw to be the backs of his eyelids. He'd never been superstitious, but every time he survived a bombing or an artillery shelling, he tried to remember everything he did so he could repeat it and keep the streak going. He'd always kept his eyes open, so he'd do the same now. The bombs landed in quick succession now, making each new explosion almost indecipherable from the last. The roar and incredible forces rocking the world shook him inside his hole. He felt his body lurch off the bottom and slam back down as though dropped from 10 feet up. He curled into a ball and thought he must look like a rubber bouncy ball inside a metal box. Time didn't function normally. He felt like his brain would turn to jelly inside his skull, shaken to death. He'd seen it before. Dead men without a scratch on them, but they were just as dead as if they'd taken a direct hit. A near miss scrambled the organs, but didn't disturb the skin. He'd die in the next few moments. He must. The human body can't take this kind of abuse. Then the throbbing and the pulsating ground stabilized. Darkness surrounded him, and he couldn't decide if his eyes were open or closed. Nothing seemed to work. His brain had checked out, but hadn't bothered to inform the rest of his body. He choked and tried to cough, but even that didn't work. His lungs burned, and the pain helped him focus. His senses came back like a flood, and he wished they'd stayed dormant. Pain racked his body. He felt weight on him and realized he must be buried. Panic embraced him, and he struggled to move, but he didn't know which way was up. Something hard struck his helmet, and he winced, but soon noticed light coming through. He couldn't hear. He'd gone beyond mere ringing ears and straight to a black hiss. Another glancing blow off his helmet, and then hands grasped him beneath the shoulders and lifted him. Two soldiers covered in white dust spoke, but he couldn't hear even a hint of their voices. They moved him, and he watched them work, as though watching from above. He wanted to help them, wanted to move his legs and walk, wanted to thank them and talk to them, but nothing worked. They set him on a stretcher, and he watched the smoke-filled sky clear briefly, and the sun shone into his eyes. He kept them open, unwilling to close them for fear of never opening them again. Someone came in and out of his sight picture, and he thought he knew him, but he couldn't remember his name. A dirty hand came down and brushed dirt and debris from around his eyes. Water dripped in from a canteen, and he felt its soothing coolness washing the dirt away. It hurt, but felt good at the same time. The soldier leaned close, and his mouth moved. He smiled, then pressed his hand over Frank's eyes and forced them shut. Frank couldn't fight it anymore. "Oh, well, I guess it's time to die. Better this way." Frank woke in darkness and panicked. He lurched upright, searching for his rifle. Something touched his left shoulder and he cringed away from it. A stern voice from the darkness.
"Take it easy, buddy."
Frank rubbed the blurriness from his eyes, then focused. He saw a shirtless soldier with bandages crisscrossing his chest. Frank stammered,
"Who? Where am I?"
"The infirmary. Where else?"
Frank remembered the awful bombing he'd endured, and he shuddered. Dim light shone, and he recognized the inside of a church by the stained glass windows and pews. They'd been pushed into a corner and stacked to make more room for casualties. He lay on the floor surrounded by rows upon rows of wounded. Nuns, Filipinos, and orderlies moved among them, administering whatever aid they could supply. The wounded soldier saw reason return to Frank's eyes, and he said, "Rest easy." Frank shifted his body. He felt stiff, as though he'd been on the wrong side of a fight, but he didn't feel any major problems. He went through each body part and decided soreness was his chief complaint. He pushed himself onto his knees and swayed.
"What's wrong with you? Lie down."
"I'm fine," he grumbled. "I need to get the hell out of this target."
"We're in a church. Even the Nips wouldn't do that."
"Maybe not on purpose, but a 500-pound bomb doesn't care what it hits, and I kind of doubt the Japs do either."
"All the shelling's been on the front lines and airfields. Clark Field, that's where I got hit."
"You were a Clark? Jesus, they plastered you guys from what I hear. Heard they took out most of the planes, but I'm hoping that's just a rumor." The soldier shook his head and his eyes glazed over, remembering. He spoke in a low monotone. "Brass got the word to expect an attack. Possibly sabotage. So they put all the planes in a tight group so they could defend them easier from saboteurs."
He rubbed at his seeping chest wound and winced. "Might have worked, I guess, but they didn't use saboteurs. Those Nip bomber and fighter pilots must have thought they'd hit the jackpot or something, seeing all those planes lined up perfectly out in the open. Only took a few passes before they'd wiped them out completely. I mean all of them. Gone."
He gulped and rubbed his short-cropped hair. "Killed a lot of good men, too. I've never seen anything like it." Frank shook his head and said, "And now they've got full air superiority and can bomb and strafe us at will." He pointed at the ceiling. "Which is why I'm getting the hell out of this death trap." A nun noticed him getting to his feet and rushed over to him. She held a kerosene lamp. It lit up her dirt and blood-streaked face. Her hard, deeply lined face held compassionate eyes. She looked like she hadn't slept or even sat down for a rest in days. She spoke with a French accent.
"Rest, soldier. Lie down and rest."
Frank shook his head and stood to his full height. "I'm not injured. Just got shook up a bit. Where's my rifle?"
"Are you sure you're well?"
She held out the light and searched his body for any obvious wounds.
"I'm fine," he growled with more bite than he meant.
"We don't allow weapons in the church. There's a stack of them outside, though. Take your pick and go with God,"
she uttered and moved to the next injured soldier. Frank turned to the soldier and extended his hand. "My name's Frank Cooper.
Calvin Ludgate.
If I were you, I'd get out of here first chance I got."
"They say we'll be transferred to a hospital soon, then onto a ship back home."
"Well, good luck, Calvin."
He weaved his way through rows of wounded soldiers. Some were asleep or passed out, while others tossed and turned, moaning in deep pain. He smelled hints of rot and decay and wondered how many men would lose limbs to gangrene in this cesspool of blood and gore. He said a silent prayer to whoever might listen for his close brush with death and his unscathed body. It took a long time to get to the front door, and by the time he did, he felt the walls closing in on him. He finally reached the large double doors and burst through. Even though the air temperature pushed 90 degrees and smelled of rotting jungle and dead sea creatures, he took in a deep, grateful breath. A few soldiers lounged on the steps, smoking cigarettes. Frank asked, "Where can I find a weapon?" The nearest soldier pointed with the tip of his half-burned cigarette.
"Over there, inside the shed."
He pulled a flashlight from his pack and handed it off to him.
"I'll want this back."
Frank took the flashlight and stepped around them. He felt every muscle in his legs ache as he descended the steps and walked the few yards to the shed. He shone the light inside and gave a low whistle. Weapons of every type had been stacked haphazardly. Springfields dominated, but he also saw old bolt-action Mausers and some German Kar 98s.
He shone the light onto a stack of Thompson's submachine guns. He'd always wanted one. He doubted anyone would mind. He rifled through a few and settled on one that looked well-used but not overly used. He pilfered a few magazines from other Thompsons and stuffed them into his pants pockets. He'd have to check the ammo when he had more time and could see better. He walked the flashlight back to the soldier and thanked him. The soldier asked, "Where are you off to?" Bright flashes lit up the night, and a low rumble rolled through moments later. He pointed that way. "Back to my unit." "At night? I don't want to hang around here." The soldier checked his watch and said, "If you wait an hour, it'll be light enough to use the roads." He thumbed toward a jeep sitting in the darkness. "We could give you a ride." "I'd appreciate that. Doesn't the thing have headlights?" He guffawed. "Sure. But the last guy that tried that got strafed within minutes." He pointed toward the dark sky. "Japs are up there, just waiting."
"Night fighters? Really?"
The soldier put his finger to his earlobe as though listening.
"Hear 'em?"
Frank's ears had stopped ringing, and he listened. Sure enough, he heard the faint sound of a droning engine.
"I'll be damned."
He sat next to the two of them and asked, "Got any more cigarettes? My supply must have gotten blown to Kingdom Come." The soldier reached into his lapel and handed him one. He lit it while blocking the light with his helmet. Frank took a deep drag and blew it out slowly.
"Thanks. I'm Corporal Frank Cooper."
"Nice to meet you. I'm John Emerson. The quiet one over there is Lou Klonsky. What unit you in?"
Frank answered, his voice taking on a proud tone.
3rd Battalion, Easy Company."
Private First Class Klonsky pulled out a tin and used his knife to pry the lid off. Frank's mouth watered and his stomach rumbled. He hadn't realized how hungry he was, and now his stomach felt like an empty cavern.
"You got any more of that?"
he asked, licking his lips. Klonsky handed it over.
"Help yourself. I'll open another one."
Frank dug in and finished the brown-tinged meat-like substance in a few seconds. He tilted the can to his lips and scraped the sides with his grimy fingers. Private Emerson asked,
"Holy crap. How long since you last ate?"
Klonsky handed him the second can he'd opened, and before Frank answered, he'd consumed half the contents.
"I don't know," he finally answered. "Seems like just this morning, before the bombing."
Emerson exchanged a look with Klonsky.
"We haven't brought any casualties here for 2 days. There's no more room. We just came by to check on things."
Frank stopped shoveling food into his mouth. He swallowed and asked,
"What day is it?"
"It's Wednesday, the 17th of December, for crying out loud."
Frank dropped the can, and the remaining contents splashed on Emerson's shoes.
"Hey, watch it," Emerson complained.
"I've been here 3 days?"
It didn't seem possible, but he remembered the bombing happened on Sunday the 14th because he'd wondered if the preacher would have a service in the middle of a war zone. Klonsky said,
"No wonder you're so hungry."
Hunger overtook his shock, and Frank reached down and scooped up the dropped can. He used his finger to scrape out the rest of the food and licked it clean. Klonsky and Emerson drove north, away from Manila. Normally, the roads became less and less busy the further from the capital the traveler went, but not so now. Driving the jeep north felt like swimming upstream against a torrential current of refugees.
"What's going on? Have the Japs invaded?"
Frank asked. Emerson kept up the constant honking.
"Not as far as I know, but it's pretty clear they will. I think these folks are trying to get ahead of things."
Klonsky agreed and added,
"They bombed a lot of the towns up north. They're running from that, too."
"Now that we need them, I didn't really understand how inadequate the roads are here."
Emerson said, "True. There's not enough of them, and none are in good shape."
The jeep lurched and bounced into a pothole as though proving his point. By mid-morning, they finally made it to an area Frank recognized. He read the handwritten street signs.
"Pull off here," he said.
Emerson honked and yanked the wheel to the right. Few travelers blocked their path on this side road, and soon they bounced along at a decent pace. They came to a roadblock and skidded to a halt. Two GIs stood on either side of the gate. The one on the right approached them with his Springfield slung over his shoulder, while the other watched them suspiciously.
"Can I help you?"
Frank stepped stiffly from the front passenger seat. "Hello, Private. I'm looking for easy company with the 2nd Battalion." The private nodded and pointed over his shoulder.
"It's up there, another couple hundred yards."
He squinted and saw his faded rocker.
"Corporal,"
he finished. He looked them over as though they might be cleverly disguised saboteurs. Satisfied, he said,
"Raise the gate!"
"You had some kind of trouble or something?" Frank asked.
"Some. We've had reports of Nips mixing in with Filipino refugees and causing problems."
Frank slid back into the front seat and said, "Thanks, Private. We'll keep our eyes open." They drove beneath the gate and it closed behind them quickly.
"They sure are jumpy."
"Everyone's waiting for the invasion. When that happens, all hell's gonna break loose."
They entered a nondescript base a few minutes later, and Emerson stopped the jeep near the flagpole. Frank stepped out and looked the place over. Massive bomb craters had torn up the surrounding jungle, making the base look much bigger than he remembered it. A few wooden structures had burned and fallen over. Ragged tents replaced them. He recognized the base, but it felt much different than he remembered. None of the soldiers looked familiar. He reached for his Thompson and slung it over his shoulder.
"Well, this is my stop. Thanks a lot for the ride. You guys saved me a lot of time."
Klonsky said,
"You owe us a meal, I think."
"Of course. Yeah, the mess hall's over there unless something happened to it. I'll check in with the CO. Emerson pulled the jeep up a few yards and parked it. He made a point of pocketing the keys. He said, "Jeeps have become a commodity. I'm keeping an eye on her while we eat."
"Suit yourself. I'll join you if I can."
He weaved his way through the tent city, heading for officer country. He hoped to find his platoon leader, Lieutenant Murphy, but came across the platoon sergeant, First Sergeant Gunnison, instead. Gunnison looked even more pissed off than normal. Frank stepped toward him and braced.
"Sergeant Gunnison," Frank said.
Gunnison stopped in his tracks and looked Frank up and down. Frank said, "Corporal Cooper, reporting for duty."
"Cooper? Thought you got blown the hell up."
"I nearly did. I just woke up this morning, in fact. I'm not injured, though."
"Good! Need all the able-bodied men we can get our hands on."
He stroked his chin.
"You're with Easy's 3rd Platoon, right?"
"That's right, Sergeant." Gunnison shook his head as though remembering something tragic.
"You'll find a lot less of them than you remember, I'm afraid."
Frank gulped and asked, "How many?"
"How many left or how many bought the farm?"
Frank couldn't speak for a moment as he thought about all his friends. Gunnison continued, "'Cause it makes a difference. The first one's a small number, and the second's a big number."
"Oh, Christ."
Frank rubbed his hands through his hair. He suddenly felt like throwing up, and he didn't want to do it in front of the platoon sergeant. Gunnison finally pointed.
"They're over there."
He gripped Frank's shoulder and squeezed. Their eyes locked, and Gunnison said,
"Get used to it, son. It's going to be a long war."